and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. All right, here we go. It's Wednesday. It's a rough one. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Mark Riley, I'll tell you, you got up a little early, right? So you're a little tired. You've been moving all day yesterday.
I moved all day and then misread my alarm clock for the second time in 3 months. It's disgusting.
I'm glad that you're keeping count, because we keep in count, too, and that is true, right, Mark Riley? The second time in 3 months, misread his alarm clock.
Got up 2 hours early because I thought 12:30 was actually 2:30.
I got up a little too early, too, man. I got up to the weird smell. Like, for some reason, I woke up and I walk out in my living room, like, what happened? What did one of these cats do? Where's this coming from?
Uh-oh.
But then you realize, like, you ever have this, I don't know, am I weird? Is some days your sense of smell better than other days? Anybody?
Can
Chris?
I think depending on the atmosphere. Depending on the air that you're in.
The humidity seems to amplify stink. Am
yes.
I right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. So I finally realized it was just the humidity and not my three cats and their poo in the other room. It was some other problem. I just, I don't know what it was coming off the street or what, but when it gets humid out, man... It stinks.
Well, you know what happens? Garbage that's left outside, which happens in New York a lot.
Occasionally.
When it gets warm and humid like that, it putrefies faster. That's all that is.
This is good conversation. Good morning. So how about that putrid stack of garbage out in front of your house,
hey.
New York? Oh, where I live in Astoria, you got to walk through all the fruit stands, and if they're going through their garbage or when the garbage... How about when the...
Ooh.
Oh, I don't want to gross people out. How about when you see the garbage truck that's leaking juice?
Oh.
Then you know that's going to be bad.
When you don't want to be driving behind one of them.
Oh, dude, sometimes my guys drive me in, get stuck behind one of those, and I'm like, oh, man, just pull over. Let's give it some time. I think I did like just garbage soup flowing out of there in the humidity, man. Come on to New York if you want to go on vacation, because it stinks. It stinks. Oh, my God. I'm all right, though. I'm all right. I turned the air conditioners off. I felt like it was sucking into the air conditioners and reprocessing it. Somebody told me, Riley, you ever hear this? Do you ever hear that if you sleep in a room with an air conditioner on, you're going to wake up with back pain? Anybody? Anybody hear that?
I've heard that.
You have heard
that? I don't
know
how true it is. I have heard it, yeah.
Because my back starts to hurt, and I start thinking one of my kidneys is going bad or my liver's rotten or something like that, and maybe it's just the air conditioner. Maybe I'm panicking. Maybe it's stress. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be running or working out so much.
No, you should be running and working out. My wife handles all the air conditioning stuff. She programs it.
Oh, my God.
She turns it off at night.
Do you do anything at home?
Nope.
Do you do anything?
I vegetate at home. That's all I do at home.
Just picture Riley gets home and he sits in a chair and puts his headphones on and just hums.
No. Yesterday was moving day. I mean, yeah. I woke up this morning. I felt like I was in a hotel, for God's sake.
Because you didn't know whose house it was?
Well, it was the first time I was in that bedroom. It's the first time looking around.
So weird.
Different surroundings.
That's so weird. And you walk into the bathroom. You're like, wow, this is someone else's bathroom. No, it's not. It's mine. I can do whatever I want in here.
Yep.
You pee on the floor just because you can.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, this is fun today. Hey, it wasn't so fun yesterday for a bunch of Air France. How about that for a segue?
Whoa.
Hey, a lot of people almost died yesterday on Air France Flight 358. It skidded off the runway after landing. According to witnesses at Pearson International Airport in Toronto, burst into flames. When it came to a stop, the crew immediately popped open the emergency doors. Everyone got out okay. A little 9-month-old baby, I guess, had a little smoke inhalation issue, but they survived, dude. Could you imagine that, Riley? How quick are you think those people went on to catch connectors? Wow.
Well, hey, let me tell you something. First of all, the crew should get all the props that they can get for really acting fast, because apparently it was their swift action in opening the doors that got everybody out.
Maybe it was the swift action of those people that were given the responsibility of the exit door. You know, when they lay that rap on you when you want the extra leg room, and then they come up to you and you're like, hey, if this goes down a fiery mess, will you be able to do this?
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah. Maybe it was those people and the crew.
No, give them all the credit in the world. I have been on planes where you feel like, you know, when you hit ground and you start veering off to one side. It feels unusual. The last time I came in from London.
I'm assuming that's every flight with you, Riley. Am I wrong? Are you one of those guys as you're coming, you're like, oh, is that right? Oh, no, that can't be right. That's a bad sound. Does that sound right?
No. A couple of times, really bad. One time when we were almost down and we pulled back up.
Yeah.
That was coming back from London. And we were told at customs, oh, yeah, you were on the flight that almost ran into the other plane.
Oh, yeah. Man, I read an article on LaGuardia once about how they stack, how air traffic controllers stack planes on top of each other, circling. I hate when they circle. I hate when they circle out by JFK because you got to go out over the water. I don't like being
that
close.
You go all the way out to the Hamptons.
I know. I just don't like being that close to the water. Don't like seeing the water. If I'm way up, like flying to Europe or something, I can sort of, you know, detach from it that we're flying over water. But when I can see the water, I'm like, oh, man, that's when I just picture floating debris. But you know what? It's interesting. In every one of my negative fantasies, miraculously, I always live. No matter how bad the weather is or how cold it is, if we go down in the water, I'm the guy swimming.
Well, it's a good thing you weren't on Air France flight number 358.
No, everybody did all right. So now, as we speak, astronaut Steve Robinson, is floating through space, my friends. Floating through space, he's going to attempt to trim the gap fillers, which are the thin fabric stiffened with a ceramic material and used to plug gaps between shuttles' tiles. What they're going to do is a robotic arm is going to maneuver him out under the Discovery, where he is going to take, apparently he's got a hacksaw, some forceps. Because you get more, less spacey age kind of tools. I mean, what the hell is that? What's he going to like, oh, these aren't working. Hold on, I've got a roach clip. Let me see if I can pull it out with my tweezers. But apparently he's going to be floating through space. I hope he's doing okay. You know, I'm thinking I'm tired. I got problems today, but at least I'm not going, this is weird. Oh, my God. I'm really in space now. So he's out there. He's doing the big work, and I hope everything goes well. We'll check back in with that story in a few minutes.
Yeah, you know, the funny part is he's not the only one that's out. Apparently one of the other astronauts is out because they have another task to do. They're supposed to be building some kind of a platform or something.
Yeah, they're having a big party out there outside in
barbecue.
Space. Yeah,
barbecue.
Yeah, they're playing that
Bring
music.
Bring out the Weber.
Exactly. Okay, now dig this. Sadly, 8 U.S. troops died in a string of attacks in Iraq yesterday. This pushes the death toll up over 1,800 as we speak. And also, there's a report that they may not getting the supplies they need from the Pentagon, the troops, some of them, but they are getting the supplies they need from drug dealers. I guess the Pentagon could be in on that as well. I don't know. Italian police seized 215,000 doses of prohibited substances and broke up a ring that supplied steroids and other performance-enhancing drugs to people around the world, including American soldiers in Iraq. Dig that. Mm. The police investigation in Italy began after a post office in Trieste. Is that how you say it? Reported that U.S. postal authorities in Italy had returned hundreds of packets of steroids and other performance-enhancing drugs because they were addressed wrong. So they get this big bag of steroids that went to a wrong address. Somebody ordered it over the Internet in Iraq. It came back through the Italian post office, and that's how they busted these guys. They arrested two Slovenians. I knew they were shady.
Two Slovenians in Trieste, Italy.
Yes. The drugs had been ordered over the Internet. As I said, the U.S. military had no comment on the bust. Steroid use has been an issue in Iraq. Contractors and troops spend a lot of time in the gyms and the green zones. And apparently, according to some of these guys, it's easily available. There are Iraqis and there are other people walking around offering them steroids and God knows what else. Because substance abuse of one kind or another has always been an issue with the military.
Well, yeah. You go back to the First World War when the Germans, you know, started synthesizing heroin to give to troops who were in pain. And then you go forward from there. There's always been in Vietnam. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous.
How about the bennies, man? They used to put bennies in the packets for the flyers, for the pilots. It used to be in your little survival package. A few bennies, man. Little uppers. Some, you know, trucker speed.
Well, yeah. And now you've got, is it that great of a leap from there to a point where they're doing roids in the green zone while they work out?
Well, you know, war is, you know, horrendous. And that's the scary thing. According to Stars and Stripes, alcohol and other drug problems are common throughout the forces in Iraq. The Army Surgeon General said that a survey of the troops returning from Iraq found 30% had developed mental health problems 3 to 4 months after coming home. So the stress of war, the stress of what's left in your head after you go to war, the readjustment period to coming home from war, which has not been helped as much as it could have been by the government, because they don't fund the VA hospitals as well as they should, and certainly not the mental health arena of it. A lot of these guys have big problems. You see a lot of Vietnam vets on the street with drug problems. Of course, it's very well known just how many people came back from Vietnam with heroin problems and other problems.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was ridiculous. And this Congress, the Denny Hastert, Tom DeLay Congress of the United States, has much to answer for in terms of the treatment of U.S. soldiers when they return to Iraq and trying to make those who have been broken over there healed.
Dude, I had drug problems because of the war of my childhood. I mean, let alone, you know, any, you know, serious trauma. I can't even imagine what some of these guys go through. But the argument around roids is not unlike we had yesterday over Palmeiro, the first baseman for the Orioles who was busted for the steroids and suspended.
Yeah.
Is this evolving into steroids being accepted in situations where the enhancement that they encourage or produce might be necessary? I mean, on some level, should we have full roid squadrons out there in Iraq or out there fighting? You know, if these guys want to do it voluntarily, maybe they should be stationed differently and utilized because they are mutating themselves.
Well, they are mutating themselves, and that's the downside of roids. You know, I remember Lyle Alzado, who played for the Oakland Raiders back in the 70s, who just roided himself to death, literally, yeah, and was one of the few who got up and admitted it before he died.
Well, let's talk when we in just a few minutes about the U.S. leaking certain elements of intelligence that come out of England and the trouble that causes between the two intelligence communities, because this has happened a lot throughout history, throughout recent history, and we're going to get into the leak clash between the United Kingdom and the United States of America. 17 past the hour. It's Wednesday. I hope you're managing. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition.
This is to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Want to say a special hello to Missoula, Montana. We're broadcasting on KKNS 105.9 FM. Hello to all the University of Montana Grizzlies out there. Pleasure to be there. Man, did I have a hard time recording your promos. Chris, can we hear that?
Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula's News and Progressive Talk Station. Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula's News. Why is that so funny?
Missoula. That's stupid. How many times I got to say this?
Tune in to Morning... come on, man. I got to go someplace. Tune in to...
Oh, my God.
That's bad, dude. I couldn't stop the laughing.
Oh, Lord, have his mercy.
These things happen. It's not that funny.
Tune in to Morning Sedition. Come on. Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula.
Oh, no.
Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to... Come on. Tune in. Tune in to Morning Sedition. Damn it. I don't understand what's going on. This is stupid. How many of these I got? What are these? Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula's News and Progressive Talk Station, 105.9 KNS.
Thank God. Thank God is right.
Nice
that,
work.
That took me like 20 minutes, dude. 20 minutes. In a second, we're going to have Rachel Maddow in here, I hope. I think she's just down the hall. She was accuracy and media editor. Cliff Kincaid blames our own Rachel Maddow for the failure of the Tucker Carlson show, the situation. We're going to talk to her in a few minutes. I'm going to quote him. He said, quote, "The problem with Carlson's show is the format, which places too much emphasis on his guests, including a regular named Rachel Maddow. She's a lesbian with hair so short that she looks like a man. It couldn't be Tucker Carlson's bow tie, could it? Or the fact that he's not funny or interesting, or his dumb hair or his smugness. They got to blame Rachel. I think she deserves to be able to comment on that myself." And I'm sure she did on her show.
I got a solution for this.
Yeah, I'm sure
you do. We talked about it earlier.
Well, let's talk about it with Rachel. So let's talk about these leaks. British and U.S. clash over leaks. U.S. sources are accusing the British of blocking the capture of a key member of the Al-Qaeda team that carried out the London bombings. Now, This is interesting stuff to me, Riley, because this is a battle between two intelligence operations that it seems to me that they don't care. The bottom line is they're supposed to be making us safer, not battling each other. All right. U.S. intelligence leaked confidential photos from the London bombings to ABC News as retribution for the Brits' refusal to allow one of their citizens to be extradited to the Guantanamo Bay Gulag through extraordinary rendition.
Yeah.
The U.S. released the photos to show the U.K. authorities in a bad light. The photos could be used by terrorists to improve their strategies in the future. These were the photos of the trunk with the bombs
with
and
the nails in it. Yeah.
So in case you were a terrorist that didn't know how to make those bombs, at least you see what they look like now. Or if you're a terrorist that's got bombs in his trunk, now you know that they're on to you. You know, this is the game that's being played. And this is all over the fact that they busted this guy, and the United States wanted to just kidnap him, bring him to Guantanamo, and do what they will on their own. And that, see, the problem here is what's clashing here, is if I'm understanding properly, Riley, is that there are two ways of handling terrorism, is that the U.K. does it through the courts, and here they do it through the military.
Well, what you have here is a classic clash between people who view this as a law enforcement issue and people who view it as something that has to be dealt with as a larger war on terror. Mm-hmm. We went back and forth, Mark. We've talked to people who've been in favor of and who have opposed vehemently the concept of extraordinary rendition, where U.S. people grab someone that is suspected of a crime, take them to another place, whether it's another country or someplace like Guantanamo.
That allows torture. If they take them to Egypt or Jordan, it's because they want to beat the hell out of him in a way that they couldn't do in the United States.
Now, this is the guy, many of you may remember last week, there was a guy that was busted in Africa. Mm-hmm. This is the guy we're talking about. The mm-hmm. guy was busted in Zambia, and they wanted to rendition him from South Africa to Guantanamo.
The British citizen.
Yes, he was a British citizen, so the Brits wouldn't let the Americans do it. And this is symptomatic of people who ought to be working together, working across purposes. And who suffers? The American public and the British public.
Yeah, and also, I mean, this whole, the entire leak of Valerie Plame, done for the selfish purposes of political retribution against somebody from this administration. This happens a lot, and they're not the only administration guilty of it. I mean, even in the case where you had the leak of A.Q. Khan in August of 2004, mm-hmm. you know, just before the Republican National Convention, to sort of distract from that. I mean, there's a lot of cases where they've been so, like, with Khan was a Pakistani computer engineer that was caught in July 2004 by Pakistani authorities. He led them to key al-Qaeda figures and cooperated secretly by sending emails to terrorists so investigators could trace their locations. The Bush administration leaked news of Khan's arrest to the press in order to defend its decision to raise terror alerts in New York, New Jersey, and D.C. And they did it as a distraction.
Yep.
But they compromised what could have even been an investigation into the bombings that happened in London. Unbelievable. So we'll be back with Rachel Maddow to discuss some stuff and how she feels about being accused by the right-wing press of ruining Tucker Carlson's show. Please. That's coming up. 27 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Material in Russia. We have a deal with Russia to lock that stuff up so that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands. We locked up more before 9/11 than after. If you ask the Bush administration and his colleagues in the State Department why that is, it's because John Bolton's pigheadedness on the issue of liability held that up.
Yeah.
He's at the root of everything that keeps me up at night. John Bolton has been a disaster.
I think that's, I mean, you know, I'm at a disadvantage because we don't have the time to refute everything you said, and I don't think I'd refute all of it, but I will say, to blame John Bolton for loose nukes in the former Soviet Union
seems like not a credible statement at all. He's the loose nukes guy in the administration. All right. He's got to answer for something.
Oh, it sounded like you won that one, Rachel. 34 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. Rachel Maddow from The Rachel Maddow Show is in here. It sounds like he kicked his ass on that one.
Except for the part where I was trying to say loose nukes, and I said, Lukes. He's the Lukes guy. The Lukes. The nukes. Looser. Nuke, the nukey guy.
But yeah. It was beautiful because it was just Tucker going, "Why? I guess I can't refute all of that, and it seems like a good... We got to go to break. The old go to break trick. I know that one. We used to do that here.
It's unfair though because I am obsessed with John Bolton. I could out debate John Bolton on John Bolton.
Did you talk about this guy? Did you talk on your show? Did you talk about this guy Cliff Kincaid from Accuracy and Media, the editor who is blaming you? Hey, I'll quote him. Quote: "The problem with the Carlson show is the format, which places too much emphasis on his guests, including a regular named Rachel Maddow. She's a lesbian with hair so short that she looks like a man."
Woo-hoo!
End quote.
Yeah, right.
And a fine-looking man, I might add.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
I like to think of myself as the not-evangelical Kirk Cameron.
So you are on that show every day.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I wasn't on last night, but I am assured that it has nothing to do with this review from the Accuracy and Media guy.
Now, do you know about these guys? Do you have you talked about this on your show?
I didn't talk about it on my show, and I don't know that much about them because I'm worried that the whole defense of people who like me or who like what I do on the show is going to be, she doesn't look like a man. And that always makes me very uncomfortable because, you know what? I do kind of look like a guy. And so I don't want that to, I don't want to say, like, I feel attacked for him saying this. I do look like a guy. I don't think that you can therefore say that's why the ratings are what they are, or even that the ratings are all that bad. But
that's what I don't understand. I'm looking at the ratings, and first of all, your appearance has nothing to do with the quality of argument you bring to this show, Rachel.
Thank you.
And also, it says here in this Media Matters piece right here, and it also said this comes from Kincaid, that 200,000 people are watching that. Now, when I was on basic cable, that was a pretty good number.
Yeah, it's not that bad. I mean, if you look at right now, if you look at the cable news ratings, and I don't even have a TV, so I never looked at this stuff before I started to be on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But Fox basically blows everybody
out of
the water.
Yeah.
And then what you do is you look at how the other networks are kind of doing, and the Tucker Show is holding its own on MSNBC.
Yeah, because when I was at Comedy Central, 200,000 people, that was a pretty good rating. Now let's talk about Accuracy in Media. This was founded in 1969 by a guy named Reed Irvine. He claimed to be nonpartisan, but he openly kept ties to conservative groups. For instance, it is mainly funded by Coors, Union Carbide, Mobil Oil. The guy who was Reed Irvine, before he died, started the Can Dan campaign to get rid of Dan Rather, and he stayed on that for 16 years.
So Union Carbide thinks I'm a mannish lesbian.
Yeah, yeah.
The people responsible for Bhopal think that I'm mannish.
Yeah. I got a solution.
And that's their biggest problem with you.
Yeah.
This is simple.
All right. Yeah.
We either take up a Morning Sedition collection, and we have the guy kneecap this guy, Kincaid, or we rendition him.
We rendition him.
Rendition him.
To put
him on a
plane. We rendition him to Northampton, Lesbianville, USA.
Yeah, there we go.
Let him suffer in silence.
Yes. Send him either to Northampton, San Francisco. Well, let me see. Yeah. What other?
Tie him to a chair and just have him sit at a bar.
Yeah.
A lesbian bar there.
And have to listen.
In the piece where he attacked me and said that the reason that he doesn't think the Tucker Show is doing well is because of me, he also went on to say that it was MediaMatters.org that got this lesbian on this show, and that's because they're run by a gay guy.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
And God knows one letter from Media Matters can have that kind of power, especially on the
moving entire network.
Yeah,
unbelievable. That's why MSNBC is so littered with all the lefty hosts. I mean, it's just,
yeah, right.
I mean,
yeah.
Scarborough constantly trying to get me to join the Wobblies.
Well, it's interesting, this Accuracy in Media organization. This guy, Reed Irvine, was so annoying. Apparently in 1975, Accuracy Media began purchasing stock in major media companies, which allowed him to attend their annual meetings and make the views of the group known to the shareholders.
Oh.
And apparently what happened was the New York Times, they knew he was a shareholder. What they did was they agreed to secret private meetings with the guy there. Look, we just want to talk to you one-on-one. So this made the organization, Accuracy Media, think like we're really making headway.
Yeah.
But they just isolated him from the rest of the shareholders so that he wouldn't screw up the meetings.
Stop standing up in the aisles. All right, geez.
Exactly.
Here, we've got an exclusive meeting for you with all our interns.
Yeah.
You tell them all your concerns.
They want to learn and listen, and they're going to make notes and get them right up to us.
But you know what Reed Irvine did that was extremely smart?
Die?
That too. But back in the day, he realized that you don't necessarily, this is 30 years ago now, that you don't necessarily have to have an organization that's composed of a huge number of people.
Hmm.
All you have to do is have a small organization of people who distribute much paper.
Yeah.
And now, since his email and the rest of the stuff has come in the years since, it's been that much easier. But Reed Irvine understood that you can balkanize an organization just based on how much stuff you send or how many phone calls.
That's right. It's just the number of press releases you send out, and if they're targeted right and you got the right funders, you can live forever.
Yeah. Well, I'm just happy that you're out there kicking some Tucker Carlson butt.
Thank you.
I think that's a great job to have, and I think
can't believe he hired me to do it. That's still the amazing thing.
Hey,
well, I think
my wallet's open to you. If you want the kneecapping option, I have friends.
I think I do know why he did it. I think he desires being beat up by you.
Really?
Yes,
are you doing a little psychological analysis here?
I love to do that.
Yeah.
I love to speculate. I think that it seemed to to me that in the exchange that we just heard, that his surrender was sort of like, thank you. You know? I swear I heard a thank you in the subtext of what was going on. Thanks for stopping by. We're going to play our very own Mort Mortensen's obituary of Reed Irvine, who died this is from January 10, 2005.
Reed Irvine, self-appointed media watchdog, dead at 82. Reed Irvine, founder of Accuracy in Media, an organization devoted to exposing liberal bias in American journalism, is dead at the age of 82. The cause? Probably from being real stupid and ugly and having a dumb name. Good riddance, you jackass. Look, I know one of you guys brought cat fur into the studio, right? You know how I get.
Sorry, man. Hey, here we are. Thank you, Rachel Maddow. She's going. She's run off to construct the news report for the top of the hour here in New York. Look, folks, here's something interesting. A 41-year-old male New Jersey middle school language arts instructor who had a sex change in February is planning on returning to teach in the fall as a woman. He was born Herb McCaffrey and is now Carrie McCaffrey. And I think Carrie is a nice choice. If you're going to be a new woman, Carrie is a fine choice for a name. She said she had been struggling with her gender identity since she was 7. She married and had 2 children and taught for 12 years before her surgery. After the surgery, she still showed up for work in a jacket and tie for a little while. But Carrie says, quote, I just want to be Carrie McCaffrey. McCafferty, a great teacher like I've always been. I'm a good influence on children. I've dedicated my life to them, end quote. Now, obviously, there are some mixed emotions from parents and from students. And I'll tell you, Riley, when I first heard about the sex change when I was a kid, I guess it was Christine Jorgensen. And
yeah.
Also Renee Richards a little later.
Yeah.
It was fascinating, and I never forgot about it. And it really blew my mind. So, obviously, there are going to be some minds blown. But I think opinions either way have certainly shifted because of the acceptance in the world of this type of surgery and also just that it can be done and is done quite frequently. But there is some resistance. One mother of 3 who prefers that McCaffrey not be allowed to return said, quote, I feel it's kind of unfair to put this on young children. It is unfair for us to have to explain it. So whose problem is that really? That's her problem. It's not a kid's problem. Kids can absorb things. You got a kid, Riley.
Yeah, I got a kid. And I'll be honest with you. There are, I think, some issues in terms of having the same group of kids know that this was a man and then a woman. There's a lot of stuff you got to explain under those circumstances. To be honest with you, because you don't want a situation where this person is going to now, you know, drag the school system through the courts, which would happen the minute they tried to actually get rid of her. To transfer it someplace else.
I'll tell you, you could do that. This is a little freaky. It's a freaky situation. There is no other way to explain that. Whether you're tolerant or accepting or you want to learn new things, it's peculiar. And the explanation, I think, for a kid, I mean, on some level, it could be as simple as, like, you know, he was uncomfortable the way he was, and he felt
and
that
this
he...
this is the way he is.
And yeah. This is the way he wants to be comfortable. So there you go. That's your option. I mean, I don't think it's that hard to explain. One parent among many of these other types of parents, which is the other side of the coin, is trying to educate herself on transgender issues. She sent an email to McCaffrey congratulating her and asking for information. Quote, if we could have some website so we could explain it in layman's terms to our kids, that would be great, unquote. Layman's terms, she went to the hospital. They did an operation, and there you go.
And now he is a she. Now,
right.
You know, at a point, Mark, I think we do have to ask, what kind of teacher is this? I mean, in the end, male, female, transgender, whatever, what kind? If she is a good teacher, I think that is one of the things that would weigh very heavily in her favor.
Well, I got a question for our listeners. You know, what do you think that this is okay? Do you think this is something kids can handle? I mean, one eighth grade student said, quote, it's fine. I think it's fine. I'm sorry she was confused for so long, end quote. We forget.
Maybe they know more than we think they do.
Well, also, like I said before, 866-303-2270. You know, like I said before, is when you're a kid, and especially a kid in the world we live in, when you have all this input from movies, you hear all these different things, they're a little more jaded because of the information they get. Certainly in eighth grade, you know a lot more than you knew when I was in eighth grade, even that. So I think that, you know, there's part of their brain that's just sort of like, well, they can do that now, so I'm glad that she was able to do that.
Well, that is, I mean, obviously the information you had in eighth grade was a lot more than the information I had when I was in eighth grade. It's an evolutionary process, and parents in many instances are like a step behind where their kids actually are.
That's a good point. 866-303-2270 if you want to weigh in on this. We're talking about, you know, explaining a sex change of a teacher to your kid. You know, are there judgments? Should it be right? Should they move the teacher to another school where she can have a fresh slate? I don't know. It's 45 past the hour. Well, I got my own ideas. I think it should be fine. But I'll tell you, it's something these kids will never forget. 45 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're taking your calls at 866-303-227. We're talking about the issue of a 41-year-old New Jersey middle school language arts instructor who had a sex change in February, planning to return to school as a woman. He was a man in the fall. And how do parents tell kids that? Should he keep his job? Should he be moved? Should kids have to deal with this? Should parents have to deal with this? A lot of issues revolving around this, ages and whatnot. We're looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Here we go. From the Associated Press, Roberts vows to honor established rulings. Roberts vows to honor established rulings. Translation, Roberts vows to honor rulings established by his anti-choice wife. From Reuters, MasterCard reports rise in credit card purchases. Okay, MasterCard reports rise in credit card purchases. Translation, millions pre-approved for bankruptcy, which they're not going to have that easy a time getting anymore, I'll tell you that. From Fox News, study links teen smoking with belly fat. Study links teen smoking with belly fat. A translation of that is study links butts to guts. Yay! Funny word.
That was cool.
That was cool. So let's talk about this. Let's get into this transgender, what do you call that surgery? That is called sex change surgery.
Sex change operation.
I guess that would be it. So let's talk to Kristen listening to us on LIB here in Manhattan. What do you think, Kristen?
Hey, Kristen.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
I was thinking, okay, you guys said that this person said that she was struggling with gender identity since she was like 7 years old, right?
Yeah.
So to me, the most persuasive thing is that there are kids who are struggling with gender identity, who are in middle school, who are in elementary school, and for them to see somebody who's open about it, who's not ashamed, who allows us to be something that's talked about, I think is such a positive example for them. And I think that can ultimately help kids. I don't think this is such a big deal. I don't think it needs to be treated like, what do we do about the kids? How do we explain this to the kids? I mean, how do we explain going to Iraq to kids? How do we explain blowing up, you know, people's countries to kids? We do that.
Yeah, well, let me ask you a question. So if a 7-year-old, let's say that this teacher is teaching the 7 or 8-year-olds who are kind of curious or struggling with the fact that they feel uncomfortable in their sexual identity, should this be an option? Do you think that a 7-year or 8-year-old should have a life of waiting to possibly change sexes? Is this a hopeful thing to them, do you think?
Wait, sorry, are you asking, do you think they should be?
Well, I just mean that, like, you know, well, I don't think they should have a sex change when they're 7.
Oh, God,
but,
no.
But I'm saying that, like, you know, someone who is open about this, I mean, is there a risk in that the kid will sort of think, like, you know, I just can't wait till I'm old enough to become a man or a woman because I don't want to be like this.
Do you think there's a risk of that?
Yeah.
Of a kid, like, going,
do you think that's a good thing, I guess, is what I'm asking?
Yeah, because, you know what, I don't think anybody would say, wow, I really want to get a sex change, unless that's something that is so fundamental to their core, because there's so many consequences and, you know, social issues that you have to deal with.
That's true.
Nobody's going to just do that. It's the same thing as, like, being gay, when people say, oh, is this going to influence kids to choose to be gay if you have a gay teacher? And it's like, No, who would let themselves do that unless they truly felt that at their core?
Right, and if they do feel that at their core, it'll give them some self-acceptance and know that it's not strange or peculiar. Good point. Thank you, Kristen. Thanks for calling. Kristen.
Now, we should say as a point of information, middle school is a little older than 7, 8 years old.
Right.
This person was teaching in a school that probably caters to either 5th to 7th graders or 6th to 8th graders.
That is a hypothetical. Oh, looks like all right, so here we go. Terry listening in Brooklyn. How are you? How are you, Terry?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you guys?
What's on your mind, buddy?
Oh, great. I was just thinking about this, and, you know, I think the problem here is always the parents. Kids are basically non-judgmental, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be easy to explain to them. It'll
right.
be difficult to explain to the parents, you know? I think about, you know, like the, you know, like in post-Reconstruction South, you know, the example of a white kid playing with a black kid until it's explained to him by the parent that there's something wrong with it. You know, what we're dealing with is the twisted values of adults rather than, you know, just the naked curiosity.
Well, that's interesting. The adult fear versus the sort of open-mindedness of the child. So you say it's fairly reasonable that that a child will just be able to absorb this without any real repercussions, but the parents will freak out. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. All right, quickly, Jason listening in Manhattan. How are you, Jason?
Hey, Jason.
Very good. How are you guys doing?
Good,
man. What's on your mind about this?
Good. Well, I'm calling this to say that, when a kid goes to school, they should be learning about the curriculum or whatever. They shouldn't be worrying about what the teacher is, where his gender or her gender assignment is. And it just gets in the way of learning. And the caller previous to that saying, you know, how can we explain the Iraq War? Well, their civic classes are, you know, classes just to talk about history and everything else like
right.
that.
Right. Well, there are health and development classes. There are biology classes. I mean, this is definitely in the lexicon of medicine, sex changes and body-altering surgery and things that are accommodating people's deeper desires to change themselves in order to be more comfortable. I think that it is certainly the realm for which people can be educated about this. But I appreciate.
So?
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, you know, then why not? I mean, you know, I had to learn it back when I was going to school. It wasn't even a discussed option culturally, and I learned it through some book, and I was completely fascinated by it. So I think it's definitely warrants honoring the curiosity of kids and educating people. Why do you think it's wrong?
Well, I think it's the parents' responsibility to talk about, you know, those confusing issues. I mean, if we're spending too much time, I think.
So you think teachers should just quit? I mean, a lot of parents are dug into their own fears that they want someone else to explain it.
Well, I think that authority should be teaching. And if someone's teaching a health class, then, you know, they're going to have to encompass every single, you know, health issue out there. And if the health issue is a gender reassignment, then okay. But.
Right, so I think that maybe what will happen...
a logical issue than a health issue.
Well, I think it'll be interesting. Maybe he'll be able to make himself available for the health class as well, and they can discuss it in a lot of different classes. I'm sure the whole school's going to be discussing it.
Yeah.
It's 57 past the hour. We're coming back. We're going to talk about... You wonder why you got, you know, 7 or 8 phone bills? Well, we're going to discuss that with somebody who knows why and figure out how to get around it. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, man. It's Wednesday morning. It seems like we're kicking into gear a little bit. We're both, everybody in here, the humidity here drains you.
It does, but we were having the calls that we took in the last hour, the conversation kind of drifted through the break.
It did. And we were talking to you about what you would tell your kid if she had a transgender teacher.
Yeah.
And you said as long as she's a good teacher, we can get past that.
Absolutely.
Help save CBGB. The famed New York rock club is in danger of closing its doors. Go to savecbgb.org to learn how you can help and join us there Friday. We're going to be there.
Yeah.
We'll be broadcasting live from the legendary CBGB in Manhattan Friday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. We have little Steven Van Zandt from the E Street Band and the Sopranos scheduled to appear, plus comedian Jim Gaffigan, live rock music, free coffee, tons of giveaways. That's Friday morning at CBGB's at the corner of Bowery and Bleeker from 6 to 9 a.m. I want to also say good morning to Missoula, Montana. We're broadcasting on KKNS 105.9 FM. Hello to all you University of Montana Grizzlies out there. Happy to be in your state. I think it's our first time in Montana. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. A right-wing group has blamed Air America's Rachel Maddow for the ratings of Tucker Carlson's show on MSNBC. Choosing to ignore the influence of the host who appears throughout the show, conservatives have adopted a sensitive and insightful blame the lesbian strategy. Her defenders point out that Maddow could dress head to toe in flannel and Birkenstocks and still not look as gay as Tucker Carlson's bow tie. Officials in California say cow farts are the number one cause of pollution in the area. Researchers first suspected a problem after the space shuttle sent a message saying, "Whoa, someone in California cut one. I can see it." A New Jersey teacher had a sex change and will return to class this fall as a woman. With the usual sensitivity of middle school students, the kids are already just collecting money for the first one of them who grabs Mrs. Wait a minute. The kids are already collecting money for the first one of them who grabs Mr. McCafferty's boobies. Okay, McCaffrey. Opponents of McCaffrey's continued employment argue that, among other things, it will confuse the biology students. Yes, it will. That's, oh, man. Because we had a moment here on the break where it's like, I think as long as it's a good teacher, it's like, you know, just sort of like, you know, as long as the thing can teach properly. I mean, because you know, some kids are going to, it's gonna appear the same. And it's like, rah! Oh, no. But not to all kids and not to me.
Hey, didn't I see you on IFC?
Oh, boy. I when I first heard about that, I still remember the picture. Like, I think it was in one of those books of whatever happened to kind of books.
Christine Jorgensen?
Yeah, that my grandmother's neighbor had. I was just sort of like, oh, my God, you can just do that? There's an argument to be made that, you know, halfway through your life, why not try it?
Look,
you know,
I got my sensitivity about this by watching John Waters' Desperate Living.
Oh, really?
A very bizarre movie about sex.
On some level, it's like, you know, if you feel like really changing things up and saying, you know, why not have a really full life?
Oh, this was a really,
you know, well, sure
you've never
was.
Seen this movie, right?
You I haven't have seen see that one. I have see not it. Seen that one. Look, you know, yesterday in an Ohio congressional election, with all precincts reporting, Gene Schmidt, the Republican, unfortunately beat Paul L. Hackett with nearly 52% of the vote. The area is a Republican bastion. I know. I've worked there. I've been there. I drew four people because they were the only four liberals that were there. Hackett, a major in the Marine Reserve Forces. Lost by about 4,000 votes after losing, he very diplomatically said, quote, "Tonight was a victory for democracy. People had a real choice." He plans to sign up for another tour of duty in Iraq, where things are really bad in the last couple of days. Yesterday, 8 U.S. troops died in a string of attacks. The death pushed the death tolls over 1,800. And now we have reports, Riley. What does that one say?
14 Marines and an interpreter were killed. This is in western Iraq. These Marines were assigned to the Regimental Combat Team 2, 2nd Marine Division, 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force. They were killed in action. A vehicle was hit by an improvised explosive device. This happened in Haditha, which is about 140 miles northwest of Baghdad. We see these insurgency strikes with increasing frequency over the last couple of weeks or so.
Yeah, in the last couple of weeks, the last few months, it's just been a nightmare. It's an average of 65 attacks a day by some reports. It's just a quagmire. It's a nightmare. It's unnecessary, and there's really no solution. Like, you know, Rumsfeld and some of the military top brass military are paying a lot of lip service to a withdrawal plan, but who the hell knows? You know, that could be a scam, Riley.
People are three-card Monty dealers. Yeah. You can find them on any corner in New York. Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, George W. Bush, they're all selling snake oil to the American people. They did from the beginning in the run-up to the war in Iraq, and now they've got no clue how to deal with this.
It's horrendous. Right now, an astronaut or two are dangling out of the space shuttle. There's two of them apparently out there building something. You know, this is the first time. Though, this is a fairly historical moment, though, because a repair has never been attempted in space. And this is being, you know, called a fairly minor repair. Astronaut Steve Robinson will be dangled, as he is being dangled, from a robotic arm and maneuvered to the bottom of the shuttle to fix these gap fillers, these thin metallic fabric, sort of ceramic material used to plug gaps between the tiles on the shuttle. Apparently, one keeps the tiles from vibrating against each other and has no real purpose for reentry. The other is designed to prevent repeated overheating of a gap between two tiles, which could cause some severe problems. He's out there with apparently with some very high-tech tools. He's got a hacksaw and some forceps and I believe a pair of tweezers. If he can't get it with the forceps, he's going to try the hacksaw and then he's going to tweeze it. There's another astronaut out there. I don't know his name, though, and I apologize.
Noguchi.
The astronaut Noguchi is out there floating around building a platform. You know, I just think, like, you know, I'm uncomfortable. It's humid here. And, you know, I had a sort of like a troubled night's sleep because of the humidity, but I'm not in space going, I can't believe this is where this brought me. Yeah. I cannot believe. When I was in high school, who would have known I'd be out here with a hacksaw? I feel a little unprepared. He's got to wear gloves, too. Hopefully he can get this thing fixed.
It all comes down to this. But you know what? When you are the first person to do something like that, I bet you really do kind of feel special, at least for a moment.
Well, this is one of those amazing things, amazing events in sense of practical training, because eventually we're going to have to leave this planet. There, some people are, because
too liberal?
I imagine, well, on some level, the people that are destroying this planet have got to have bigger plans. I'm assuming, you know, I have this theory, Riley, that all the science fiction fantasies about aliens and about different life forms out there in the world or mutants or strange gill people, I have a feeling that all of those things may be true, but they haven't happened yet, and they're starting now. Do you understand that, you know, once we master this space program, and once the genetic engineering gets a little out of hand, and things get weird with that, and, you know, I think that Earth, as it is, stands right now, might be the only planet in the solar system that has intelligent life, and we're just beginning to see the mutations. And everything that you see on science fiction programs and all the speculations or flights of fantasy that science fiction writers have created are just starting now. We're at the beginning. It starts here, and this is what the future has been told in many different ways, but it's not pre-existing. It's now.
Oh, no, it's now. And see, the nightmare scenario is Earth as a takeover target. Uh-huh. In other words, there are people out there maybe in other solar systems or creatures in other solar systems. They're looking at us, and they're saying, oh, okay, now they've got this thing out there. There's a robotic arm. Now let's go get them.
Well, you know, I still don't think that they're out there. I think this is the beginning, and I think that what's going to happen here is certain steps are being taken to master space travel, but it's almost primitive. He's out there with a hacksaw, right?
I know.
And it's almost heroic in a way that's the tool they're using, that there's something that human about it. I like it, man. Hey, you know what? I got this thing in the mail yesterday from Verizon that I don't understand. I just don't understand it.
I got plenty of things from Verizon I don't understand.
Dude, look, they said, thank you for ordering the following services from Verizon. We appreciate your business. These services are going to become available at the end of June. Now, I don't even know what the hell the services are, but it says that I'm going to be paying bills 1 month in advance. And you get these things, and you're like, I didn't call anybody. Nobody talked to me about it. I have no idea what the hell
this
is.
Wait a minute, it says thanks for your order or something?
I just found this. I hadn't opened it, and I got to call them back because it looked like one of those advertising things. So I didn't open it, and I opened it today. And we're getting five bills for I pay three or four bills just on phone service alone between my the house in L.A. and the small house in L.A. Don't judge me.
Yeah.
You know, but we're going to have somebody on here to talk about this stuff because it is confusing and they are ripping us off. And Brendan was able to get back a few bucks, which is like a heroic tale in terms of getting on the phone with these idiots.
And well, you know, I had to spend time because I just moved. So you have to, there's a horror story involved with that too.
Well, we've got a guest that's going to come on and clear this stuff up. She's a professional with this stuff. She does it for a living. We've also got Future Mark, in the batting pen. So it's, is that what you call it? It's on deck. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
20 past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Sedition. Hey, if you live in Seattle, I'm going to be performing at Giggles Comedy Club this Saturday night. Two shows. Go to giggles comedy club.com for ticket info. That should be fun.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah.
Sorry to bother you, but Future Mark is on line one.
Great. I love that guy. Put him through. Hey, buddy.
Hey,
what's
buddy,
up?
What's up, man?
So, Future Mark, what's going on in 2050, man?
It's actually 3050, Mark. Time is a construct. Don't get hung up on it, man.
Okay, so, wait, what's that noise, man? What are you doing? It sounds like a jazz club underwater.
You know what? It is a jazz club underwater. I'm at a Gill Club in Atlantis.
Dude, Atlantis? You mean the cheesy resort in the Bahamas?
No, Square. Atlantis, you know, legendary underwater civilization. They found it, man, and it kicks ass. All the cool Gill people have moved down here.
Gill people?
Yeah, while the rich cats spent all their bread on the technology trip and space travel and all that, the regular cats back here on Earth evolved. You dig, man?
Evolved and grew gills?
Yeah, man, and wings, all sorts of stuff. Yeah! Right on, man. Right on.
The gill people are humans that can breathe underwater?
Yeah.
So wait, whoa. Dude, do you have gills?
Does he have gills? Yeah, right.
Was that Future Riley?
Yeah.
And he's got gills?
Yeah. Evolution, baby. Evolution. All right, let's not talk about that anymore. I already stick out like a sore thumb in here. I gotta wear a tank. Everyone's looking at me like, who let the tanker in here?
Wow.
A couple of weeks ago, I brought this hot gill chick in and almost got my ass kicked.
Yeah, man, don't pull that crap again. She was fine, though.
Wow. So it's kind of what, like, restricted then, right?
Yeah, it's like the coolest place in the world. But, you know, they don't usually let tankers into these clubs. They don't like the spacesuit and tie guys around.
Oh.
If you haven't evolved, it's like wait outside, Melvin.
Oh.
Tankers have, like, you know, separate bathrooms and everything.
So how'd you get in?
Well, Riley's friends with the manager, and he plays drums on Wednesday. It's all about the music, man. Jimmy 8, 5 stroke 6, the Saxby Parsec Quintet, the Gill Clones. Dude, I saw Future Chick Corea here 2 weeks ago. Man, he blew me away.
Dude. Future Chick Corea, come on.
Anyway, I'm trying to get them to let me go on stage and read my poetry, man. You know, just riff, you dig? Huh? Just wail, make my music with my words, man.
Hey, man, we've talked about this. A tanker comes in here getting all loud, they're gonna throw you out. Be cool, man.
Sorry, man. I'm cool. I'm cool.
All right, I get it. All right, so look, I don't want to get you into any trouble. Do you have any advice for me before I go?
Yeah, man, and this is heavy, dude. Give Chick Corea another listen. Okay? More specifically, his 1976 disc, The Leprechaun. It'll change your life, man.
That's it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll run right out and get that. Thanks.
Yeah, riff, man, riff. Just push it.
Okay, we're out of here. Come on, hurry. Damn, I can't take you anywhere.
What? I'm hip, I'm hip.
All right, we got everybody in here. Pashman, Dan Pashman's in here. Brendan, hey. P.W. McDonald. We're going to have some conversation now about, you know, we got someone coming on the phone that's going to give us some advice, to give us some help in navigating how we're all being ripped off by phone companies and people. Like, look, it took me, what, about $1,000 to figure out which plan to land on. You remember when cell phones first started happening and you thought you got the right plan, then you get that first bill for $900? I used to think about, like, how much money of mine has Sprint gotten just because I didn't pick up the right plan? And that's a scam they do on purpose.
Riley, are you screwed right now because of your move? Have you had to sign up for all these new things?
No, ironically enough, I've been very lucky. Now, I could not take my phone number with me, which is the hardline phone number, which is a real pain in the neck. And I could not take my current carrier. IDT is not transferable. So you have to go back to Verizon and order up from Verizon and then transfer back to IDT.
And they've got a monopoly on the lines, I think, Verizon does.
They built the
area.
Lines. That's
right.
What they did. Yeah.
So you can't not have them on some level. You have to have them. And I don't shop for deals. I don't have time. Everything's too confusing. I barely have time to, you know, just to be me, for God's sakes. What, do you have problems with this, Pashman?
Absolutely. It's just so frustrating. You get your bill and you see all these little teeny tiny charges, you know, a few pennies here, a dollar here.
your stupid charge?
Yeah, right.
Well, and those things
the
are...
sucker charge.
They're there. I guarantee on purpose. That is some scumbag's business model of how to add a few cents that most people, when they go over their bills, are not going to see and not going to dispute it. Because I just had to sign up the same thing you had to do, Riley, because I couldn't transfer. And I had to sign up with Verizon when I moved. And I signed up for the lowest possible plan, which was $35 a month. And I got a bill for $50. I called up and found out that they... that the $15 extra basically is mandatory because it's a line charge and service charges
FCC
and all that
line charge that
they don't tell you about. And also I had a few cents tacked on in like local calls, which I shouldn't have been paying. And they said, oh, well, that's in error. We'll take that off. If I hadn't have called, that wouldn't have gotten taken off.
Right.
But what wound up happening is that I made a big enough stink because I also signed up for their internet service that they credit me now $10 a month because I threatened to drop it. And so I think I want you guys to ask our guest who's coming on, is that what you should do? Should you really fight these people and say you're going to drop service? Are they told that that's what they're supposed to do when you threaten to drop?
Well, I know that you can do that. Like, they have more power to do stuff like that than they certainly let on.
Exactly.
Same with airlines. You know, those people that say that, like, there's nothing I can do, they can totally
do there's plenty they can do.
I bought sunglasses a couple weeks ago, and I was hemming and hawing over the price, honestly, just hemming and hawing, and the woman was like, all right, I won't charge you sales tax. And I was like, what? How did that happen?
Hey, look at that. He thinks he got a deal. Yeah. Smiling Dan Pashford, like, I win. They took 9 cents off. Yeah. I'm like, come on.
But can you imagine,
then I got to take another 10 bucks off. Once you open the door, I went for the kill.
That's it. The annoying Jew plan is what they went through right there.
Can you imagine, though, how many listeners are out there right now that are getting ripped off just pennies and how much that's adding up? Like,
to them.
Yeah, to these companies. Oh, we got to ask this guest how to do this.
Well, we're gonna have a guest to clear this up. Morgan Jindrick will be here. She's director of hearusnow.org. Stay tuned for that. Maybe you'll learn something. Help yourself. 27 past the hour. Morning Traditions, Air America Radio. There you go.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, let's take some practical action here on Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We're about to get on the phone with somebody from, she's the director of hearusnow.org, Morgan Jindrick, and we're going to take your calls about, we're going to talk about telephone companies, scams, too many bills, how they're ripping us off, 866-303-2270. I mean, do you ever feel like you're getting ripped off by your cable, internet, and phone companies? And why is it that when you agree to a plan that's supposed to cost $59, you end up with a bill for $75? Our guest is the director of hearusnow.org, a website set up by the Consumers Union in Washington, D.C. to help us help ensure that you aren't being taken to the cleaners. Morgan Jindrick joins us on the phone this morning from Washington, D.C. Good morning, Morgan.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. So what is the most common mistake consumers make when subscribing to a lot of these various services, considering we don't have much of a choice in a lot of cases?
Well, I think the most common mistake is that the majority of people don't have all the information they need in front of them before they make a decision, and the companies are banking on that so they can sell you the work.
But is there a possible way? It seems like if you were to really just assimilate all the information that you need, it's like, who has time? There's like books and wads of paper.
Well, hearusnow.org, the site that I write
and
work on out of Consumer Union, we publish Consumer Reports magazine, so we have lots of research behind us. We have all the different loopholes, research before you buy, after you buy, what you need to know to understand your bills, on all the different areas from cell phone, cable, internet, telephone, long distance, and local.
Okay, well, that sounds good. So that's all at hearusnow.org.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, good. So now let's talk some practical stuff. Can I actually, now, like, I know if I do a little investigating, I'm going to find some problems with my phone bills. What are the odds, generally, when you call up, like our producer Brendan McDonald did, and tear them a new one, that you're going to get, you know, some money back or you're going to get taken care of?
Well, I don't know what the exact odds are, but I know the special ways to go through and get those things taken care of, such as, first of all, when you call up, make sure you have a lot of time on your hands because they're going to take you for about an hour before you're going to get to anybody who can actually make a decision.
They do that on purpose?
I think so, because they're waiting for you to hang up so they don't have to deal with you.
Right.
Well, on top of that, I think you should call before 8 p.m. Some people wait till they get home to make that call.
Yeah.
But the people who actually are there that can make decisions are before 8 p.m. They got to go home, too, sometimes. And I think that the third most important thing you can do is ask for someone who can make a decision, someone with decision capabilities on the phone. And those are the people who can actually reduce your bill. So the person who you first talk to can't actually take down any prices or any charges off your bill. But if you get a supervisor on the phone right away.
So you got to keep pushing. You got to keep pushing through. And the design is that they are banking on the fact that you don't want to surrender half of your day to doing this, but that might be what it takes.
Well, and they're just sitting there all day long taking calls, so they have all the time in the world to answer your questions or to not answer them, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm. Now, Morgan, it seems to me when most people get their bills, they're told, you know, they're paying $40 or $50 or whatever for a particular plan, and suddenly they see their bills and the bills are much higher. And a lot of these, you know, end up being line charges and different usage fees and these sort of things. How is a consumer supposed to sort all that out? And more importantly, sort out whether or not they're being overcharged in that gap between what they're told they're going to pay and what they end up getting on their bill?
Well, the rule of thumb, when you see that $39.95, we all know the number, in the New York Times or the Sunday paper in your hometown, and it says one low monthly fee is $39.95, add 20% to that. That's going to be your end bill. So I would say you could bank that it's going to be 20% more than what you actually see in when you're looking at the advertisements. What those are called are taxes, fees, and surcharges. And these you can't just minus them from your check every month and send it in, because the Federal Communication Commission told cell phone companies that they are allowed to charge these different fees and surcharges. So, for example, when I see something called the regulatory recovery fee on my bill, when I hear recovery fee, I think that's going to the government. In fact, I know that's going to a company's bottom line. To know about those things is really important, like I said, to do your research. However, at this point, there's nothing that the actual consumer can do to remove it from their monthly bill today. However, the Federal Communications Commission right now is looking at the truth in billing laws, and we may see some of those fees and surcharges taken off.
So have there been actual cases where these companies have been accused of ripping people off in a way that was dubious in terms of the FCC or in terms of legalities?
There's a few consumer groups that are out there right now that have filed some cases in front of the FCC. They filed a petition that's a couple hundred pages long talking about all the different loopholes that companies have gone through to call these things fees so that they're not in that $39.95 advertised price. They can make the price at the front look lower, and then once they get you into their year-long or two-year-long contract that you have to sign, you're kind of locked in because then there's an early termination fee.
So is this available on the site, on hearusnow.org, some of these scams?
Oh, yes. It's all on there under the consumer tips section.
Like, what are some of the things they do to bump up the bill?
Well, I would say that they add on things such as the text messaging.
Mm.
They add on the call waiting. They add on the voicemail. They add on the ringtones and the bigger package. And by the end of the time that you're in the cell phone company's storefront, you walk out with, instead of $39.95 as your base price, you're walking out with $80.
At least.
And that's 20% of that.
Incredible. Morgan, I just moved, and I found out something very interesting. I was subscribing to IDT and found out that there's no portability for a hard line. When you move, you have to actually go back, in the case of us here in the Northeast, back to Verizon for the service. Why is there no portability for some of these special services like IDT and these other phone, newer phone companies?
Well, the first question that when it comes to porting your number, taking your number with you, is if you're staying within the same locality.
Yeah, I was moving three blocks.
All right. Well, now, if you're moving three blocks, the Federal Communication Commission last year said that landline companies, phones in your house that are hooked up to the wall, have to let you keep your number when you're moving in between. Now, in your case, if they did not allow you to keep your number, then you can go back to the Federal Communication Commission and file a complaint. And the FCC is required by law to follow up with both you and the company within 30 days. And you'll actually get a telephone call. I've tested it out.
But now, here's what I don't understand. Which company do they have? Do they have to now go back to Verizon, which is where I had to move? They can't go to IDT because I couldn't take IDT.
They would be, you weren't able to get IDT in your new locality?
I couldn't switch the existing IDT service to my new home. I had to go back to Verizon, and then if I want to go back to IDT, I have to apply all over again.
Oh, that's a shame.
Wow, yeah, Riley. It sounds like you got to invest some time, make some phone calls.
Well, yeah, because this was a shock to me.
You're going to have to get on the phone. I would go to the FCC first because, like I said, they are required to follow up within 30 days. And they'll call both IDT and Verizon. So that way you have all the companies, all the players in one big circle, and the FCC is the ringleader, and you can maybe get the answers that you're looking for.
So here's the big advice, then, Morgan Jindrick, director of HearUsNow.org, is that we got to take the time to not get ripped off. We got to get on the phone to the FCC, if possible, at least to a supervisor at these phone companies, make a stink, and if we're persistent, we can maybe get some of these charges removed or some of our money back.
Exactly.
All right, let's take a call from Tom. He's got a question. Tom, how are you? What's your question for Morgan?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, all man.
Right. All right. Well, ma'am, I live in Oregon, and we use Quest Communications.
Quest,
and back in February, they sent me a letter saying that from when I had lived in another town here in Oregon, that when I lived in that town, I was overcharged for monies and was due a refund, and fill out this form, and we'll send you some money. I said, okay, great. I filled out the form and everything, mailed it in. Didn't hear nothing from them from February to, May. And then in May, I called to them. They referred me to some public relations firm in Minnesota that was supposedly handling it. I called to the public relations firm in Minnesota, and they say, oh, yeah, we're going to send you a check, da-da-da-da-da. And here it is August now, and I haven't heard anything from them.
How much money are we looking at, Tom?
That's the thing. They have never said. They just said that it was determined that it was owed to me and to fill out this form. And
okay, all right.
Well, what's coming.
Let's see what Morgan has to say. Thanks for your call. So Tom was given the runaround. He was owed money by another long-distance service when he was forced to change services. This is Quest, and I've had problems with Quest myself in the past. And now he's been referred to a public relations company, and they're just basically trying to stall him because it's probably not a lot of money, and they're just hoping he tuckers out, aren't they?
Well, that's the key to refund, the big refund word. Companies banking on consumers tuckering out before they get their money. I think it's a great business plan. But I have to say, in Tom's particular case, the Quest refund has been passed on to another company. So what I would do if I were Tom is, first of all, I would, as I said before, I'd file a complaint with the Federal Communication Commission at FCC.gov. And then after I would contact the Better Business Bureau in my local area in Oregon where he lives, and I would also contact my local Attorney General's office. All three people, the FCC, the Better Business Bureau, and the Attorney General, filed the same complaint with all of them, just changed the name in the salutation. And I would hope that if all three had the information in front of them, at least one would go out of their way to find out what this company in Minnesota owes Tom and give them a check.
Mm-hmm. Morgan, real quickly, are the extra charges the same, the ones that we talked about earlier, between a regular hardline company like Verizon and some of the new cable-based broadband phone services?
Are there extra charges?
In other words, are the extra charges, the FCC line charge net, are they identical on both services?
Well, what you're talking about is digital phone, or some people refer to it as voice over the Internet.
Yeah, the stuff that they're bundling now with Internet service and cable service.
Yes, those Internet telephone and regular telephone that you plug into your wall at home are regulated differently. And so there are less surcharges and taxes and fees on Internet phone, but I don't expect to see it stay that way for long.
Well, we got a guy on the phone, I think, is using one of those right now. Jimmy, listening in North Carolina, what are you using?
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
It sounds good, whatever you're using. What are you on right now?
I'm on Vonage. I've been using them for over a year. They have different service levels, but it's excellent. You pay $25 a month for unlimited calls in the United States and Canada. Their long-distance rates are comparable to everybody else. I mean, I call Japan sometimes for, 2 cents a minute.
Yeah.
Wow.
The other thing is, you pay, pre-monthly. So there is a little bit of taxes and everything, but I've never had a bill over $30 a month.
Really? And that's with the long-distance usage?
That's with long-distance usage.
And how do you do it? How does it work?
Basically, you subscribe to the service.
Yeah.
They charge you a month in advance, and the first time you activate, they charge you about $30 a month because there is a piece of hardware you need. You get this piece of hardware, and you connect it from your cable modem or your DSL modem to this box.
Huh.
And then you plug your phone into the back of this box.
Okay.
Two phone jacks. So, you know, for convenience issues, I use a hands-free phone system, in the, not a hands-free, but a cordless system in the house where I have one bass and, like, three different handsets.
Yeah. Okay. All
right. And basically that's it. I mean, I just pick up the phone. You guys hear me. I've never had a problem with Vonage. There's other companies that do it, but Vonage seems to be the most stable. I mean, you can go to sites like CNET, and they have ratings and stuff. Like, he's even doing it, but they're... There's the rates on theirs is, I mean, it's crap.
All right. We'll check it out, Jimmy. So, Morgan Jindrick from hearusnow.org, is this the solution you were talking about?
Yes. I actually myself am a Vonage subscriber. I have the same plan Jimmy does, the $25 unlimited a month. And he is correct. I've never had a bill over $30. However, with the recent Supreme Court case decisions where cable companies are able to control their lines a little bit, more than before, we're looking at the possibility that you're going to have to go with your digital telephone service over the cable company that you already subscribe to.
God, they keep figuring out ways to screw us, don't they?
They come up with ways to keep it in the family.
All right.
For sure.
And the solution is, bottom line, is take your time choosing. Go to hearusnow.org for some research. If you got a problem, you got the FCC to call. You've got the company to call. But make sure you allot yourself some time to talk to a supervisor. If you have to call your local attorney general or write them, you can do that. It takes time, but it's worth it because these people are chipping away at us. Morgan Jindrick, I appreciate your information. And hearusnow.org is going to get a lot of hits today to people curious how to change their situation.
Thank you very much. I hope they come and share their story with us because we have a forum where they can tell us about these things, all the ways that they've had successes or they've had buyer bewares, and then we could share it with everybody else.
Okay, great. Morgan Jindrick, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Morgan.
You know, that's good information. Vonage, they owe us some money. we'll be back with the product placement minute. It's 48 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning's Edition.
Hi, this is Phil Lesh from the Grateful Dead. One time, I was listening to Morning Sedition and Marin started riffing on the Bush administration. Then Riley came in with a slamming groove about the right wing's use of the media. Just when you thought it couldn't get any freakier, Marin broke into Scarlet Begonias. What a sick jam. Best show ever. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. You know, Riley, we got another call from 6th Avenue saying that's our corporate headquarters where chaos reigns, saying our show has to make more money. That's the one thing that they did come out with, is that we need to make more money. Otherwise, our engineer, Chris Opresso, has to beg for money on the subways while singing doo-wop. So here's today's product placement minute. Play the happy product placement music, Chris. So what's our product placement news story today, Mark?
Well, Mark, as of Friday, the death toll from the record monsoon rains in India was up to 749. Most deaths were caused by collapsing walls, drownings, and electrocutions. Excuse me a second, Mark.
What are you eating there, Mark?
This? Why, it's Dinty Moore Beef Stew, America's number one selling stew with tender beef, fresh potatoes, and carrots, all simmered in a delicious beef gravy.
And stamped with Dinty Moore's guarantee of hearty satisfaction.
Hopes of finding survivors dimmed as rescue workers dug up more bodies in flood-ravaged Bombay neighborhoods and outlying villages.
It's good.
In one northern suburb, a water-soaked hill collapsed on top of a shantytown, killing at least 110 people. 45 others were missing and presumed dead.
Boy, that stew sure smells good.
Doesn't it, though? Landslides wiped out entire families in the shantytown. Police and civic workers cautioned shanty dwellers to move out, but they had nowhere else to go.
God. That's the worst story I've ever heard. Hey, let me ask, for the benefit of anyone who's as disturbed by this story as I am, where can you find Dinty Moore beef stew?
In your grocer's canned meat aisle, Mark. Mm. Also try Dinty Moore's meatball stew, chicken and dumplings, and microwavable scalloped potatoes and ham.
Wow, that sounds great. Tragic story, Mark. Mm. Thanks a lot, Ryan. Woo! Hey, I like the way that comedy bit works.
Whoa.
I like that one. Hey, come on, it's all right.
And hey, I have an alleged reputation to uphold here.
Yeah, I know. And no one knows you don't eat meat.
I know.
And no one knows you don't care about Indian people.
See, the people out in Richmond Hill, Queens, out here in New York, not far from where you live, they're all coming in.
Oh, no, it's just comedy. Hey, folks, look, help save. Hey, folks, how do I always say that? That's my new segue line. People, please. Here's some real important stuff. Help save CBGBs. The famed New York Rock Club is in danger of closing its doors. Go to savecbgb.org to learn how you can help. And join us there this Friday. We'll be broadcasting live from the legendary Rock Club in Manhattan. That's Friday morning from 6 to 9. We're going to have little Steven Van Zandt from the E Street Band and the Sopranos. He's scheduled to appear. Comedian Jim Gaffigan. Some live rock music. Richard Hell might be there. Maybe. I heard
from Richard Hell and the Voidoids?
Yes, possibly. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
He was one of the original guys, and we're going to get the whole history. That's this Friday at CBGB's at the corner of Bowery and Bleecker from 6 to 9 a.m., of course. I will be at Giggles the following night. That's Saturday, the August 6th, in Seattle. If you want to go to that show, you can go to GigglesComedyClub.com for ticket info. Also want to say hi while we're taking a minute to do this kind of stuff to Missoula, Montana.
Yeah.
It's day one. We're broadcasting on KKNS 105.9 FM. Good morning to all the University of Montana Grizzlies out there and the people of Montana. My buddy Jack Bulware is from Montana. Montana's a beautiful state.
I've never been there. I wish I had been.
There's some space.
Yeah, plenty of space. Blue skies forever.
Some mountains. It's good. It's good. It's a place where people go when they want to
get away.
Maybe I will go. I'm going to ask Jack if we can go visit where he grew up. We got the War on Brains coming up here in just a second, so stay with us. This is Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, 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 blah. It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Air America Radio Geniuses, Philosopher Kings and Queens, Working Class Heroes. In just a few minutes, we'll have the War on Brains. In just a few minutes, Goliath, a little Goliath, will arrive with my coffee. He got some emails yesterday. You know, I had a coffee from Starbucks, and we were talking about Starbucks. And, of course, some idiot is sort of like, hey, what are you guys going to give Starbucks free press for? They're a bad corporation, just like Walmart. But you know what? It's like, look, occasionally, you know, you have a Starbucks. It's sort of like, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
you
get it yesterday. I won't do it again anytime soon.
It's not about giving them publicity. I don't drink it every day. But, you know, it is an option. It's in the damn building.
It's in the building.
For
you
God's
be a flower
sake.
Shop there.
Hey, people get so worked up about silly things. Look, you know, the coffee stinks, but I'll tell you that the soy latte thing was all right. There's nothing good about it. And they seem like they're religiously fanaticized or something. They're like caffeine's and absorbed into their skin, and they got this glowed look. You know, they're always overly nice there.
Oh, they're always, oh, hi, sir. I mean, I'm walking in the door. I don't even have to get anywhere near the counter. Oh, hi, sir. How you doing?
It's just that, look, you know, it's all about prudence, my friends. If you don't get strung out on any one thing, you don't end up, you know, selling your soul over to any one corporation. That's what I say.
Yeah.
What are you looking at, Earl? All right. You just sit there and wait till it's time to do your bit, buddy. I'm kidding. I'm being snotty. Let's talk a minute about the space shuttle. The guys are out there. You got Steve Robinson, the astronaut, and Noguchi, the other astronaut. They apparently successfully installed a platform and an external tool on the International Space Station. Now, Steve Robinson, it has to be dangled by a robotic arm and maneuvered underneath the shuttle, where he's got to trim some of the gap-filling material that's in between the tiles of the shuttle. He's got himself some forceps. If he can't pull it out with his gloved hands with a tweezer or forceps, he's got some sort of makeshift hacksaw that's got a curved blade that's been put together with Velcro and duct tape. I like the human element of this. There's a certain MacGyver element to them, even though they're up in space. It's beautiful.
Velcro. I guess you might need that if you're, you know, all that's between you and the universe is a robotic arm.
I don't know if the Velcro is going to hold him on. And I know, Riley, you've got this strange 2001 fear of him drifting off into space
forever.
That's a personal fear, I think. The California Supreme Court ruled that businesses have to give registered domestic partners the same benefits extended to legally married spouses. This is a big deal. This is a big ruling. The ruling came in the case of a lesbian couple who sued Bernardo Heights Country Club and Rancho Bernardo in San Diego over membership privileges. The women had been partners since 93. One was a member and the other wasn't, which forced them to pay guest fees and limited their golf play together to six times a year, which is sad if you want to play golf with your partner.
Yeah.
She sued over policies that allowed spouses and children of members to play for free. Now, the suit was based on the policy being discriminatory against them and unfair because in California, same-sex couples can't legally marry, but they can register and get the same benefits in some cases. So now they've got the benefits across the board in light of businesses. So this is going to change things with insurance companies. It's going to change things with home ownership. It's going to change a lot of things when it comes to same-sex couples who are registered engaging with the business world and getting the same benefits that married couples get.
It's amazing that something this groundbreaking happened over golf. I mean, you'd think it was over some great overriding issue or something, but it turns out whether or not you and your partner can play golf.
But and it's also about membership. It's about exclusive clubs. It's about being treated a certain way, in light of the fact that either you're gay or, you know, even in terms of like being Jewish or black in history.
Don't have any of them in this country.
That's true. But, I mean, it's a similar type of issue. It's about membership. You know,
yeah.
It is about golf ultimately, but it's also about equality and being treated fairly. The ruling affirmed the state domestic partnership law, which went into effect January 1st. About 30,000 people have registered with the state as domestic partners.
These people don't play either. These two ladies that actually got this ruling done, they knew exactly what to do and when to do it. They registered right after the law went into effect and then filed the lawsuit.
That's great. All right, what do you got for me there? We'll let you throw that in later. And now you feel like you're out of the loop, people listening. Let me bring you in the loop.
Uh-oh.
Every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the 4-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Washington, D.C., home to the original copy of the Bill of Rights, its precious pages stored in helium to make it sound even funnier than it reads.
Come on.
Gentlemen, behold, the withering volleys of incoherent flubdrub have once again pierced a hole in the noble breastworks of human perception. In his most recent effort to shove his Elmer Fuddian dogma down the collective maw of an apathetic contagion known as the American populace, our Special Olympics president, the one 62 million of you voted for, evidently on a dare, came one step further this week to taking America from its current position as the laughingstock of the world to the laughingstock of the universe. For it was Monday, during a roundtable interview with reporters from 5 Texas newspapers, including the Houston Hee-Haw Chronicle, the Fort Worth Star Telegram, and the Dallas Morning, I hit that duck on the head news. I hit it on top of the head. I hit it on the head. That duck, I hit it on the head. On the head. Frog spit. Close enough to squish turtles.
What?
Bush made the amazing observation that students should be exposed to, quote, different ideas. Unfortunately, he was talking about divine creation. That's right, intelligent design.
Mm.
Not so much an idea as a weird dream you get whenever you go to bed on full stomach of fried pickles, Mr. Pibb, and Astroglide.
Oh, man, what?
Shameful. Ignominious. In a statement which probably excited most Christian fundamentalists enough to create a hot lump of life in their trousers, Bush elaborated by saying creationism should be taught alongside evolution in schools. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark.
Yeah.
But according to the famous reference volume, Hilarious Superstitions for Dummies and How to Influence People, the main precept of intelligent design is that all life on Earth is too complexly advanced to be explained by science.
Yeah.
Which went on to list other things he believes are too complex to be explained by science, like math, how to fill out National Guard attendance forms, and why food goes in one way and comes out looking so different.
Mark?
Yeah?
Does this country really need to be lectured about the origin of life by a man who spends most of the year in Crawford, Texas?
No.
A place many scientists believe is too complexly stupid to be explained by science?
Oh, man.
The Americus fecundity of it all, Mark.
I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Frogs be it. Like the duplicitous Weimar Republic of long ago, Bush's why not more empire of gluttonous nature rape enthusiasts and borderline masons seek to destroy us all, if not first by arsenic poisoning, then by the sheer bone-jarring idiocy of Christian fairy tales.
Yay!
Besides, everyone knows all life originated from a giant exploding tomb of Prel concentrate. So what are we all arguing about? Prel concentrate. Just a little cleans a lot. Now with Retson. So until next week, freedom fighters, remember, the only time your kids should be hearing the word divine in science class is when the teacher asks them what drag queen ate dog poop and pink flamingos. And that's today's dispatch from
the War on Brains.
Oh, wow. Nice John Waters reference.
Thank
there,
you
pal.
Very much. Yeah, there was a couple. You made one, and then he made one, and it wasn't connected. That's weird when that happened, because that makes me think there's something else going on out there. You know what I'm saying, Jim?
Yeah, like I'm listening to the program before I come here.
Yeah.
Oh. Scary.
Did you?
While he was ironing his shirt, obviously.
Oh, really? So that's it. Oh, really? But did you add that when you were listening to it?
No.
Oh, see? No, so it was. Yeah. It was. There is something out. You know what? Let me talk to you. You're a vegetarian. I think I overdosed on soy because I ate too much soy. Because last night I had the craving. I had the soy ice cream, which isn't good. Have you enjoyed the soy ice cream?
It's all right, but, you know, I stick to the dairy.
He loves all things soy.
Yeah, he just told me. He told me something else that other people have been telling me, that there's estrogen in it. So if I start growing them, you let me know, because I'm not there yet. Wait a minute.
You're pretty flat, pal.
You're like an Amazon.
Oh, stop it, Jim. Come on.
Now, you're a very pretty woman. I've always said that about you.
Thank you very much. I think we should.
I love your comedy, too.
Oh, now you're saying all
I'll
the right
I'll say it
things.
Giggles in Seattle.
Yeah, do you like this lipstick color?
That's lipstick?
All right. Look, I'm going to go have my non-Starbucks coffee here in just a second. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the Saudis. We're going to get Gerald Posner on the phone to talk about, you know, what is going on now that they've shifted power from, because King Fahd is dead, and what's going to happen in terms of monitoring terrorism out of that country, because it seems that some of the London bombers were affiliated with the Saudis. We're going to get into that, so stay with us. It's 16 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Wow, that's good non-Starbucks coffee. 20 past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
No Starbucks here either.
So let's lay those sad numbers on me, Riley. It's a horrendous day in Iraq today.
It is a horrendous day. 14 more U.S. Marines, also a civilian interpreter, were killed outside of Haditha. This is some 140 miles, I believe it is, northwest of Baghdad. This was one of those improvised explosive devices. And, of course, this is now more than two dozen American deaths in Iraq during the past week and a half, including a journalist who wrote for the New York Times Magazine named Stephen Vincent, who just wrote a piece this past Sunday and was abducted and killed, shot in the head. They just found his body.
Oh, my God. That's awful.
It's just
awful. And that brings the total death toll of U.S. military personnel there, over 1,800.
Over 1,800.
Well, you know, we're not going to shift gears completely off a similar topic, though. The one sad reality that we've grown to learn from people we've talked to on the ground in Iraq and from people that know what they're talking about is that this war is doing nothing to fight terrorism, in this planet. This war, if anything, is encouraging and training a new generation of terrorists. And
despite that, just to, you know, despite the fact that, you know, there are people dying there every day in a war that was built on a lie, it was an extensive business plan on behalf of the neocon death cult, that we now have, you know, British intelligence and American intelligence arguing with each other, you know, tit for tat, battling with each other over leaks and using leaks of information to reprimand the other each other. It's pathetic. It overlooks the fact that there are people in danger. That this is an unsafe world. U.S. sources are accusing the British of blocking the capture of a key member of the Al-Qaeda team that carried out the London bombings. Now, this is arguable stuff, but what really needs to be known about it is that U.S. intelligence leaked confidential photos from the London bombings to ABC News as retribution for the Brits' refusal to allow one of their citizens to be extradited to the Guantanamo Bay gulag. Now, this is not just extradited. This is extraordinary rendition. This is where they literally, you know, kidnap a suspect and take them either to Guantanamo, or if they need to torture them, the U.S., under the veil of secrecy, flies them to a country that enables torture. Now, the U.S. released these photos to show the U.K. authorities in a bad light. And what ultimately happens is that no one cares about that except for the tit-for-tat between intelligence agencies. What really happens is the terrorists who may be planning more bombs are now informed because of the leak as to, you know, that they might be in danger and they might need to wait. Or they're informed on how to make a bomb look the way it's supposed to look. Either way, it does not protect the public. It doesn't serve the public. It's tit-for-tat where we live on a planet where terrorism is a real problem and they should all be communicating with each other.
They should be, but one of the things that's interesting here is there was a great deal of fanfare, Mark, after the London bombings when people said, well, they're sending Americans over to assist the Londoners in the Metropolitan Police Scotland Yard in finding the people responsible. It was one of that team of Americans that was sent over there that apparently leaked these photographs.
And this administration, certainly in the level of politicizing terror threats, this is not unusual to this administration. They've used them before. They've used them even in this Karl Rove case. This Karl Rove case, Karl Rove and his minions and the neocon death cult who leaked Valerie Plame's name, not only compromised her undercover identity, but they compromised the future of intelligence. They compromised our ability to actually recruit undercover people. They compromised the identity of whoever was working beneath her. They might have really put, you know, thrown a wrench into intelligence operations that could have, you know, helped in stopping future attacks, future lies, but they don't care. These guys are enemies of the country. When, you know, the leak of the AQ Khan in August 2004 is another great example. Khan was a Pakistani computer engineer that was caught in July 2004 by Pakistani authorities. He led them to a key Al-Qaeda figure and cooperated secretly by sending emails to terrorists so investigators could trace their locations. All right. Now, the Bush administration leaked news of Khan's arrest to the press in order to defend its decision to raise terror alerts in New York City, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C. And this allowed some of Khan's associates to flee before they could be caught. On Khan's confiscated computer were plans for bombing London subway and the names of Pakistani Brits in Luton, England. And Luton is where many of the terrorists that bombed London in July came from. Because the Bush administration leaked Khan's name, the Brits were never able to ensure they had rounded up the entire Luton cell. Is that how you pronounce that? Luton?
Luton, yeah.
Now,
Luton.
See, this was just to, you know, just to raise alerts to keep, you know, momentum going for their campaign. For the Bush campaign, this was to keep, you know, maintain a level of fear. They didn't have to leak this guy's name. They were raising alerts every 5 minutes for anything.
See, the problem here, Mark, is a very simple one. The more that the Bush administration tampers with American intelligence, and tamper they have, from Dick Cheney driving over there to Langley to all of this sort of thing, the more that they tamper with this, the more they damage American intelligence's reputation around the world. Other intelligence agencies will start refusing to deal with the Americans if this kind of thing keeps up.
And that is not what we wanted in the post 9/11 world. We wanted a unified intelligence community globally so we could, you know, maybe stop some of this stuff before it starts. And a lot of that will have to, you know, require a policy change.
Yep.
There's been a change in Saudi Arabia. The new ruler of Saudi Arabia is King Abdullah. Abdullah has been effectively leading the country since 1995 after King Fahd's stroke. Hours after King Fahd's death, Bush Bush called Abdullah, quote, my friend. He also said the U.S. looks forward to continuing the close partnership between our two countries, unquote. The State Department described Saudi-American relations as excellent. A spokesman said that the two countries have a close working relationship on terrorism. Last month, Prince Bandar, Bush's old buddy, resigned as Saudi ambassador to Washington. He's being replaced by Prince Turki bin al-Faisal, a former head of Saudi intelligence, and Bandar is going to be the intelligence guy. But what I want to know is, what about the links to these London bombers? What are they doing about extreme jihadism, about the Wahhabis? How is it, you know, let's talk about the Saudis. No one ever does, but Gerald Posner does, and he's going to talk to us. He's the author of Secrets of the Kingdom, the inside story of the Saudi-U.S. connection, coming up next.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We'll be at CBGB's on Friday in Manhattan, Friday morning, 6 to 9. We're going to have a little Stephen Van Zandt from the E Street Band and the Sopranos. He's scheduled to appear. Comedian Jim Gaffigan will be there. Richard Hell might be there. Live rock music, free coffee, tons of giveaways. That's this Friday from 6 to 9 at CBGB's, the corner of Bowery and Bleecker. The night after on Saturday night, I'll be at Giggles Comedy Club in Seattle for two shows. Go to giggles comedy club.com for info and tickets. Our next guest wrote about the cozy relationship between the Bush family and the Saudi royal family in his book Secrets of the Kingdom, the inside story of the Saudi-U.S. connection. He also wrote about terrorism and why America slept, the failure to prevent 9/11. He joins us now by phone from Miami, Florida. Please welcome back to the program, Gerald Posner. Good morning, Gerald.
Hey, guys. How are you?
All right. How you doing?
Good, good. Thanks.
So in spite of this, you know, this new round of terrorist attacks and threats by people with ties to Saudi Arabia, the U.S.-Saudi relationship remains, you know, relatively unspoken about as far as I can tell. Why is that, Gerald?
You know, it comes back, not surprisingly, to oil. We just give the Saudis the benefit of the doubt every time. And you're absolutely right. Not only even the fact that we've got a couple of the, you know, bombers in London calling Saudi Arabia, or having spent time there before the bombings took place. But in addition, the biggest terror bombing in Iraq so far that's taken place was actually up in Mosul in a mess hall in which somebody working in the kitchen blew himself up as a suicide bomber and killed more Marines than anywhere else. It turns out that that suicide bomber had a Saudi diplomatic passport.
No kidding.
Yeah, his father's in the Saudi diplomatic corps. Mark, what you just said, no kidding, is what gets me so crazy about this. Just imagine what the Bush administration would be doing if the suicide bomber who killed more Marines than anybody else in Iraq had had a Syrian or an Iranian diplomatic passport. They would be, Rumsfeld and Bush would be pounding the podium saying, how was that possible? But because it's the Saudis, they get away with it. When they sentence dissidents who talk about you know, free elections to 7 to 11 year jail sentences, as they did a few months ago to these poets, not a word that comes out. When they imprison or execute homosexuals, we don't say a thing. When they fail to expand women's rights, you know, we say we're freeing women in Afghanistan, but we don't say a thing about the Saudis. So it's not just terrorism. We give them a free ride on human rights as well, and it's and the questions in Iraq, it's just driving me crazy.
Not to mention that 15 of the 9/11 bombers were Saudis, and that was rarely talked about in the mainstream press.
You know, what was interesting I thought about that is the mainstream press got, you know, sometimes, and you guys know how this works with the mainstream press, they get a word or a phrase and it becomes sort of a mantra, and they repeat it so many times, but they don't do any investigative work to look behind it. And the perfect example was the 15 of the 19. So you would hear, you know, lead-ins to the 9/11 attacks would say 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudi. And that was great. I mean, at least they got that point down. But then they never went beyond that to say, what does that really mean? And one of the things I was always amazed at, another example where the Bush administration didn't do anything, is that two of the hijackers, it turns out two of those 15, actually were getting money they ended up getting it through a circuitous route through the wife of the ambassador to the United States from Saudi Arabia, Prince Bandar. She was giving this money to a Saudi agent in Southern California who was giving it to his wife for medical treatment. Then when they no longer needed it, They were passing it on to a friend who was giving it to two of the hijackers who he, quote-unquote, ran into by accident the day they arrived in America. The interesting thing about that is the two Saudi agents involved in this, they're back in Saudi Arabia. They left after 9/11. And the Saudis refused to allow anybody from the Justice Department or anybody from Homeland Security or the FBI to interrogate them. They refused to extradite them back to the U.S. So this lingering question of how did official Saudi government money end up in the pockets of two of the hijackers, is it really the coincidence that the Saudis give us as an official story or not, has never been aggressively pursued because the Saudis have blocked us. Yet most people, I don't know about it, or A, don't know about it, or
wow.
B, if they did, they've long forgotten about it because, as you said, the mainstream press never pushes the issue.
Now, Gerald Posner, we see on the one hand all that you just talked about and about how the United States government will give the Saudi government a pass on some of these things. But on the other hand, we also see the Saudis funding Wahhabist Islam, madrasas throughout the Middle East, in Africa, in Southern Asia. How does the royal family benefit by allowing this kind of, because it's a very tightly controlled society, my assumption is the royal family could cut this money off tomorrow if they wanted to. How do they benefit by walking this line between being friendly to the United States, but also being essentially friendly to jihadists?
Yeah, you know, Mark, you ask such an interesting question because they have this real schizophrenic relationship when it comes to this extreme form of Islam. You know, I write about this in secrets because the problem for them is they founded this country 70 years ago together with the founder of Wahhabi Islam. I mean, it was a joint partnership, and so it's always been a country based on this extreme form of Islam that really brings everything back to the 14th century, doesn't like technology, doesn't embrace the outside world. It's the basis for fundamentalism terrorism, no question about it. But over time, the royal family's become more westernized in many respects. It's done this partnership with the West, and that's why the real fundamentalists have turned against them. But they believe at the royal family level that if they cut this money off, if they don't fund the madrasas, if they don't fund the hardcore Wahhabi Muslim clerics around the world in mosques, that they will have all of that form of Islam turn against them en masse, and they will lose their power base in Saudi Arabia. Probably true. So what they try to do is funded outside of Saudi Arabia largely. They're funding the madrasas, the schools that teach the next generation of suicide bombers in Pakistan. They're sending money to America, to Britain, to Southeast Asia, as you just said. And their view is, let it sort of grow around the world. Let's be good Wahhabists in sending the money out, but let's keep it outside of our borders.
So they're willing to just let these let 9/11 happen, let the bombings in London happen as just a byproduct of what they think they have to do, and the U.S. allows that.
Well, this is the part that I think is most infuriating. You know, immediately after 9/11, there was a thought in Washington that we've got to stop the flow of money from a place like Saudi Arabia. We don't want somebody writing a check to al-Qaeda, and we don't want them jumping up and down and saying suicide bombing is good. But that's too narrow a focus, because as you were just saying, the real focus has to be on the funding of Islamic extremism, this sort of perversion of Islam, this extreme end that takes it and makes it into a jihadist faith. And that's what Washington has not done and hasn't pushed the Saudis. They've gone over there. They've sent some teams from the Treasury Department that say, hey, fellas, you know, be good sheikhs, and why don't you come around and fill in all these gaps in your financing? And the Saudis move very slowly. They do a few things. They make the Americans happy for a week or two, and then money continues to flow. We haven't been aggressive with them. And, you know, the real problem on this is I'm often told by people who have followed the Saudi relationship, and in the book I talk about this a lot, every American president since FDR and on has given the Saudis the benefit of the doubt. They've been craven to them. Jimmy Carter, even when he talked about human rights, gave the Saudis a pass because he wanted them to sign off on the Camp David peace accords with Israel and Egypt, and they still didn't do that. They screwed Carter. But Clinton was nice to them, Bush the elder. The real problem here for this Bush is after 9/11, everyone should realize that it's long overdue to change our relationship with the Saudis. And this Bush, who would have had the status to do it, because of his family's background in the oil business and the cozy relationship that his father had had with the Saudi prince, Prince Bandar, the ambassador, would have been the perfect guy to do it, just like Nixon was the perfect president to break the rule and go to China.
Yeah.
But he didn't have the courage to do it. And that's one of the great disappointments, I think, in legacies of the Bush administration, is that he had the chance to have actually said to the Saudis, look, it's time to really start playing ball. No more of this window dressing. But he just couldn't bring himself around to it.
Gerald Posner, how big a role, if any, does the presence of U.S. military bases in Saudi Arabia play in terms of inspiring jihadists throughout the region? Because I've heard, and I think we've had people on the show before, who have said that that military presence on Saudi territory creates a problem.
Mark, no question about it. As a matter of fact, there was. I think that one of the great mistakes the Saudis made, you know, looking back, was their 1990 decision. They were so nervous that Saddam Hussein was going to swoop down after invading Kuwait and come in and take their oil fields, that they let Americans into the kingdom. They let the infidel in, essentially, on holy soil. And it created a whole series of problems for them, you know, with we had mixed sex army, men and women, you know. Saudi Arabia was the only country where American military personnel had to wear a burqa when they were leaving the base. They couldn't drive a jeep. You know, they had special hours to go to the gym. And we followed their rules to the extent possible, but it enraged the fundamentalists. So that for a while I thought, okay, if you take American troops out of Saudi Arabia, you're going to take out one of the big issues driving bin Laden and others. But in the last year, finally, we've taken those troops out. They are now gone. And the bases, there were seven different bases, they have in fact been dismantled, turned back to the Saudi military, yet you see no let up in terms of the pressure on the West, because I think that it's been replaced by Iraq. If there was any chance that it might diffuse a little bit of the anger of the fundamentalists, what's going on in Iraq has certainly, you know, eclipsed that.
And obviously, Gerald Posner, author of Secrets of the Kingdom, the inside story of the Saudi-U.S. Connection. Obviously, what's happening now, as you said earlier, and I want to address the current situation just a little bit, is that, you know, Saudi nationals are going to Iraq. They're getting the training, fighting against Americans. They're operating as suicide bombers there. It's expanding the reign of terrorists and spreading them throughout the planet, from what I can tell. And now what I want to ask you is, now, last month, Prince Bandar, the Bush's old buddy, was replaced by this guy, Prince Turki bin al-Faisal, and Bandar might become the head of Saudi intelligence. What does that mean for the future of Saudi-U.S. relations?
You know, I mean, it's really intriguing, because trying to read the cards, the political cards, the Byzantine backdoor politics of the House of Saud is, you know, a sure bet when you say something, you get it wrong, because when you think that you're looking at it logically, then they go ahead and do something else. I agree that Bandar is back there to solidify his power base, because look at the current king that took over, Abdullah, who had been the crown prince, is 81. The new defense minister, who's Bandar's father, by the way, Sultan, is about 80. This is not a group of leaders. They've been around for 20 years that are going to be here for a long time. So when they go, the next group of princes who take over are in their 50s and 60s. They're Bandar's age. Bandar's earned a lot of enemies over time in Riyadh, because he's had this high living lifestyle in the West. You know, takes everybody up to a 65,000 square foot home in Aspen and plays golf with Colin Powell and
right.
Tennis with Bush the Elder. And so he has to go back and now what I do his time in Riyadh. He has to show that he's a good Wahhabist, and that he doesn't go out and party, and he may, in fact, vie for something in the Defense Department or the Intelligence Division. Bandar is a moderate by many of their standards. He at least understands that although he may be double-faced, there is a future only with the West. The new ambassador coming in here to America, though, is really interesting, because he had been the guy, Prince Turki, who had run Saudi intelligence for 25 years. He had run it at a time when bin Laden got started. He was the Saudi prince who went off and negotiated with bin Laden back in 1990 and as late, through the 90s. He was the Saudi prince who was sent to negotiate with the Taliban when they were trying to give up bin Laden. So he clearly understands the inside of Islamic extremism better than anybody who's ever been posted to Washington.
All right, Gerald. Well, that, you know, so then things are getting pretty interesting, even more interesting. The conspiracy is either going to widen, or else something might actually move forward with reining this thing in.
Boy, I'll tell you, you know, it move forward with reining this thing in. I keep thinking it's possible, but it's almost a matter of luck, because, you know, the old line that Bush gave after 9/11, you're either with us or against us. In geopolitics, I think those of us who understand that politics isn't quite so easy, or certainly not international relations, that would be hard to do.
Right.
Saudi Arabia and Pakistan are the two that prove better than anything. You know, you can have it both ways.
It's
with us one day and against us another. And
It's frightening.
Not much we can do about it.
It's frightening to me. Gerald Posner, Secrets of the Kingdom is the book, the inside story of the Saudi-U.S. connection. Also the author of Why America Slept, The Failure to Prevent 9/11. Thanks. Always great talking to you.
Thanks, Gerald.
Thanks.
You take care. 47 past the hour. We'll come back and close things up. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
Morning Sedition. Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula's News and Progressive Talk Station. Tune in to Morning Sedition, weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula's News. Why is that so funny? Missoula. That's stupid. How many times I got to say this? Tune in to Morning... come on, man. I got to go someplace. Tune in to... I couldn't stop. I don't even know why this 66 happened. It's not that funny. Tune in to Morning Sedition. Come on. Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula. Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to... Come on, tune in. Tune in to Morning Sedition. Damn it, I don't understand what's going on. This is stupid. How many of these I got? What are these? Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on the... Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula's News and Progressive Talk Station, 105.9 KNS. Thank God. Yeah, there's a good morning to you, Montana. This is the first day that we're broadcasting out there. Welcome aboard. We're happy to be in your state. Folks, help save CBGBs. The famed New York Rock Club is in danger of closing its doors. Go to savecbgb.org to learn how you can help and join us there. Friday, we'll be broadcasting live from the legendary CBGBs in Manhattan. Come on down. We got Stephen Van Zandt, Jim Gaffigan, the comic. Stephen Van Zandt, of course, Little Stephen from the E Street Band. Maybe Richard Hell's going to drop by 6 to 9. We're going to have live rock music, free coffee, the whole nine. The following night, Saturday, August 6th, I will be at Giggles Comedy Club in Seattle. Go to giggles comedy club.com for ticket info. What do you got there, Riley?
I'm just looking at the same thing you're looking at. We want to make sure that people know that there's been a petition filed demanding that President Bush fire Karl Rove. Go to airamerica.com/Rove to sign that petition.
Dig this. Dig this, Riley. Space Center, Houston. Huh?
Uh-oh.
Discovery astronaut Stephen...
Robinson.
Yeah, Stephen Robinson pulled the first piece of dangling material from the shuttle's belly. Yeah, I don't know. I guess he did it with a forceps. Did he just do it with his hand? We're not clear, but he did it. The first piece is done. I don't know if he had to use his space hacksaw or his tweezers, but apparently he did it. This is very exciting because it's the first time they were actually able to repair it.
You think they're going to fix it?
Of course they're going to fix it. I'm optimistic. I think that he's going to pull this off. This is a big step for... Oh, that's been said before.
Yes.
This is a...
One small step man.
It's amazing. He's out in space fixing something. You know, a lot of people can't fix things just in their kitchen.
Yeah.
Hey, so let's do this. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. A right-wing group has blamed Air America's Rachel Maddow for the ratings of Tucker Carlson's show on MSNBC. Her defenders point out that Maddow could dress head to toe in flannel and Birkenstocks and still not look as gay as Tucker Carlson's bow tie. Republicans have also accused Maddow of playing the articulate, well-reasoned card. Officials in California say cow farts are the number one cause of pollution in the area. Residents are being discouraged from pulling the cow's fingers. Oh, fellas. Really? A New Jersey teacher had a sex change and will return to class this fall as a woman. Parents got a little concerned when McCaffrey told students, that's her name, McCaffrey told students, when I get back next year, we're going to have the best show and tell yet. Look! Boobies!
Ooh.
All right, yeah. Ms. McCaffrey's class is looking forward to the new year. One eighth grade girl said, it's good to have a teacher who knows what it feels like to have developed breasts over the summer. Yeah. Phrase of the day. Just drop this into conversation. So Bush thinks schools should teach intelligent design, huh? Along with evolution, intelligent design would be in the would be the first intelligence that Bush hasn't tried to manipulate. Wake up, sheeple. In Bush's creation story, on the seventh day, God created yellow cake uranium. How do you like that, Riley?
Hey, so guess tomorrow. What we got tomorrow? Dar okay. Williams, singer-songwriter, will be live in studio playing some music. Plus, the stunning conclusion of Morning's Edition Radio Theater.
And this guy, Ray Moynihan, this guy is going to talk to us about how pharmaceutical companies are actually making up illnesses. A while back, pharmaceutical companies said, why can't we sell medicine like they sell gum? We just got to convince the people they're sick. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, my head hurts. You got anything for it?
He does.
Oh. Okay.
He'll know where you can get some.
It's been fun, Maren.
It has, buddy.
See you tomorrow. All this right. is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.